Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise will cover the entire show, so please be aware spoilers will follow. Also, this is a discussion about running Westworld as a functioning business. It is not a criticism of the story itself, as we do understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us hate mail.
Welcome back to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld, where we try and figure out if we can run Westworld as an actual business. With me today are Chris Nelson, Patrick Swanson, and Tom Ara. Tom, talk to us.
Graceful intro, Pat, or Joe.
Wow.
Damn it.
One beer.
I know. So I think today what we're going to talk about is we're going to start a little kind of arc of talking about the business side of things, maybe the business issues is what we would call this. And in order to kind of have a level playing field here, I think it would be good to start talking about what does a normal reporting structure look like inside of a company? Because a lot of the business side issues that we're going to end up talking about are probably going to stem from either things like wrong decision makers or people being involved when they shouldn't be, or just not having the right people involved in general. And so one of the questions that I had, and Pat or Chris, go ahead and jump in here if you know the answer. What would be kind of the difference that you guys would see between the board, which is something we hear about in the show a lot, and maybe like the C-level executives, like obviously Ford would be one of those C-level executives kind of running the park. What do you think?
Are you asking if the board-level executives should be running the park?
No, let me try and rephrase the question. What do you think the difference is between something like a board of directors and a C-level executive?
Well, I'd expect that the rank-and-file employees would regularly see the output of the decisions that are made by the C-level executives, but that the board's actions would be largely opaque to them.
Okay, I think that's a pretty good summation. I think the board's really there for kind of steering things, right? Trying to make sure that overall the park, the company, is going in the right direction. But the reason I was going down that path is, right, the board is brought up multiple times in the show, and it's always really brought up in a negative context, right? They're always kind of looking at things in the sense of, what is, the thing that I need to escalate to the board of, you screwed up. And to me, that doesn't seem like a great use of anybody that would be at a board level's time or energy or, you know, what we're paying them to advise us on. I think some of that stuff you should really be end up moving down to, like, the people actually running the day-to-day business, the C-level executives. Maybe we'll even start to get into things like executive vice presidents or VPs really running each department. It seems like kind of an inverse thing that's going on, where everything needs to be escalated all the way to the top in order to bring attention to something, rather than the company and the people running the company actually rallying around something to fix a problem.
So essentially what you're trying to say is that the board should be much more involved in long-term strategy and planning rather than direct intervention in the day-to-day company affairs.
Again, Chris saves me from a long rambling...
ramble?
Ramble, thank you.
Into a shorter condensed ramble?
There you go. And so we have done a little bit of research and... On the Westworld subreddit, there was a community-made org chart, and we'll take this and we'll throw it in the show notes. But it's really based around the characters that we see inside the show and what their supposed structure could look like. And when we kind of take a step back and look at that, I think it's pretty clear right away that there's a lot of layers missing. There's probably people having way too many jobs, way too many responsibilities. And then there's kind of just no real clear distinction between groups or departments.
In looking at that specific org chart too, Tom, I think that there are a couple of things that jump out immediately here. And part of this could just be the fact that we are looking at a user-created org chart. But the very first time we looked at this, the thing that jumped out at me the most was that Ford, being the park director and co-founder, doesn't report to anybody. I think those of us here at least understand that ultimately that's where the board resides, right? Your C-level executives end up having to explain their decision-making and their day-to-day impact to the board, who kind of steer that ship from behind the scenes and make sure that those people that are making those day-to-day decisions are not making dumb day-to-day decisions.
I think it's clear if you watched Westworld that Ford indeed reports to nobody. You can see the board going there and explaining to him exactly what he's going to do, and he plays along, and he says, yeah, sure, of course, that's right. And the board puts people in place to try and put Ford in check, and Ford just rages against it. He reports to nobody.
Okay, so, and that's probably a good point too, is we understand the way that it's supposed to work. We understand that C-level executives should be reporting up to a board. So how do they go about approaching that when you have essentially a rogue C-level executive like we have in Ford? Do any of you feel that the methods that they end up undertaking to attempt to rectify this problem are the correct one?
I don't know if it's the correct one, but I think you can go back in history and look at certain companies who have almost done similar things, right? Where the board is coming in trying to get rid of a CEO or bring some other new CEO in. You know, obviously they're not going through the corporate espionage that's trying to happen inside the park, levels of detail like that. But, you know, pretty famous story of like Steve Jobs being forced out of Apple. You know, a lot of people know that one, that the board pretty much came in and gave him an ultimatum. You need to leave, or we're just going to get rid of you. And so I think that things like that do happen, and boards are there in order to keep these C-level executives in check, right? When we have a board of directors, and especially if this was a public company, right, the board is there in order to keep the interest of the shareholders, right? Making sure that the interest of the shareholders is actually listened to, and things like capital is moved forward, and you know, we're bringing in revenue, all the things that you need to do to keep moving the business. And if we have a rogue CEO like this, like Joe likes to say, I don't see any reason why the board shouldn't and even wouldn't want to step in and rectify the situation.
I'm not sure what other options they really have, given what we see in the show. I mean, the amount of leverage that Ford has is extensive. He can take his toys and go home if he wants to. The board is afraid that he'll ruin the whole park and no one will be able to recover it. And so I feel kind of funny advocating corporate espionage, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to remove the leverage so that they can run this company more effectively. I almost feel like of all of the actual human beings we see in this show, the board is the closest to the good guys we meet, which is a very weird thing.
I think what you first described was the premise of episode 10, the board trying to force him out and him saying no.
Well, this game has been going on a lot longer than just episode 10. When Ford has that talk with Teresa, I think it's the eighth episode where they're down in his secret basement, you know, ultimately, you know, leading to her death. And he alludes to she's not the only plant the board has ever put there. They've been having this fight for a long time in a lot of ways. And it definitely wasn't the 10th episode where they had the host with the satellite laser in his arm. There's been a number of efforts along these lines to remove his power so that they can start running this like, or closer to like a real company.
So it seems like what we're kind of centering around here is the fact that what we're looking for is essentially a clear chain of command, right? We know that we've got these C-level executives, we've got the board essentially above them. So let's go one layer deeper, right? What comes underneath the C-level executives? And I think we have some of those players in the show, but before we even get into that, let's just talk about how we could even split up the departments that we have to really deal with, because that happens a little bit in the show already, but it's maybe not as clear as it should be.
So here, before we jump into how we think it could be improved, I want to lay out for the people that don't have the Delos org chart in front of them, what audience members have sort of crowdsourced, what they've put together of what appears to be the different pillars of this company. And it seems like the three different verticals, three different structures that at least technically report up to Ford are QA under Teresa Cullen, narrative under Sizemore, and behavior under Bernard.
So I would even argue that we probably need to take a step back from that further and say we keep using the term C-level executives. I think that we're making a mistake in using the plural form of executive in this, because the only executive that really exists in this entire company is Ford. We could start breaking it into looking at the groups that Pat just mentioned and saying that we need to start seeing how this all shakes out, but we really don't have a CFO. We don't have a CIO or a CTO. There's no chief product officer. We don't have anything that's helping guide this whole process aside from Ford. He's essentially your CEO, your CTO, your CFO, all rolled into one. Do we think that is a sustainable approach for a company to take?
Well, we're coming at this from the view of what we see in the show. And I agree 100% that Ford's doing way too much, and he's acting as essentially a C-level everything, especially when it comes to things like engineering and product, because that's what the park is. I think we could make at least a little bit of an assumption that with a company as big as this and a product and a park as big as this, there's probably at least one person watching the books, right? I think there's got to be some sort of CFO there. That doesn't seem like something that would ever be on his plate. There's got to be some sort of marketing person that's in the picture, but obviously not in the show, because how do you, you know, get the word out of what Westworld is and market this out to customers? Now, I agree. I'll go back. Ford does way too much. He needs to split his responsibilities up and have clear delineation between all those. But I think some of the people that you mentioned are there. They're just not shown in the show.
You know, I have seen a product owner pull up in IDE to write some code, and I have shamed him into saying, like, you know, you're not supposed to write code. Don't write code. Multiple product owners, even.
Yeah, Pat, I don't know if he's talking about you or me or probably both.
Yes, I think. Yes, both of us.
So I think the point that Joe was really trying to drive home there, though, too, was if it's bad practice for a product owner to become that involved in the day-to-day nitty-gritty aspect that they're overseeing, it's even worse for your C-level executives to be doing things like writing code. And I think that, you know, there have been instances where you have CTOs that are still writing code. I mean, we've got Ford that's still writing code. We know it's bad. We don't think that that's something that, I mean, if you have a company that's five people, needs be what they are, you know? But at this level and with a company this size, it's inexcusable.
And for those listeners that haven't been in our industry, the reason we're saying that, the reason that we don't think that product owners should be in code or CEOs should be in code, it's not because it's bad to write code. It's because there's responsibilities that you have that are supposed to come first. And if you're doing something else rather than them, everybody else that's dependent on what it is you're supposed to be doing is going to suffer for it. And the higher in the organization you are doing that, the more people are going to suffer, and the greater the extent of the damage you're going to do.
Delegate, delegate, delegate.
So now that we've covered some of that, can I go back to where I was trying to go, which was departments and, you know, what we think we should get back to, actually split up the work as?
Sure. So first off, I think we already called out that there's a bit of an interesting situation there. You have the quality assurance organization and the development group siloed from each other. And the only other group that's really being part of this siloed departmental approach is narrative. Those aren't usually the way that you stack those out. I would argue that keeping QA that separate and then having to take it even a step deeper into the failure mode, having security report up through QA instead of having it branched off separately is just, the whole org chart sucks. We would have to redo the whole thing. That's where I'm going with this.
You know, you don't need to sugarcoat your opinions in this podcast, right? You can come out and say what you really mean.
I thought we were going for a PG rating.
Okay, yeah, never mind. Sugarcoat your delivery, please. So, for those people that are looking at the fan-made Delos org chart, I want to call out that this is sort of a combination of two things. In any organization, you've got an explicit org chart. These are the people that they give you raises or they fire you. You know, this is your boss, and you get this structure. Now, sometimes it's a tree and sometimes it's a matrix, but there's always an explicit structure there. Now, there's also an implicit structure, which can be radically different. And that's how these people actually work together. Now, in practice, the only person we ever see give the bartender in the cold storage downstairs orders is Ford. Now, does that bartender report to Ford? Well, A, it's a host, so it probably doesn't report to anyone, technically. And B, no, probably not, because it's so... if it was in the org chart, it would be so low. It would be weird for the park director to have let's call it what it is, a peon reporting direct to him. And when you look at the org chart, you're going to see kind of a combination of both of those things. So as we're going here, talking about how things ought to be structured, we're going to be focused mostly on the explicit structure. The implicit structure, the way people work together, that's just something that happens as people work together and they discover who they can rely on. And it's often based on how reliable individual employees are, as well as a bunch of other things. So to keep the conversation simpler, we're just going to talk about the org chart that the company would normally display to new hires, say, to explain what's going on. Is that clear to everybody?
Yeah, and I don't think that we are also looking to do a huge deep dive into each organization, right? But let's talk about maybe some of the ones that we won't go too far into, right? We were talking a little bit earlier about, okay, there's obviously needs to be some sort of finance wing or department of actually taking care of the books, making sure money's going in and out the right way, that we don't get sued by the government because we didn't pay our taxes. There needs to be a marketing department so that, the people who we're trying to bring into the park know what they're getting for their money because they're paying a lot of money. And then we obviously have some of the departments that we see in the show, but maybe we want to talk a little bit about reorganizing them, right? We talked a little bit about QA. Security was one that we talked about that in the show is pretty clearly under QA, which seems wrong. We obviously have development. There needs to be some product group in order to figure out what are we actually building? That may tie in nicely with the narrative. But being that we are a group of engineers, and especially on the QA side, I feel like we've got a lot of animosity around the QA and the security part that's shown in the show. So maybe we should start there and talk about how should we actually set that up. And I can see Chris is already gearing up with comments. He's ready to go.
Well, it's more that I feel like animosity is the wrong word there. I mean,
I've had the pleasure of working with security people before, and I'm pretty sure they would take offense to thinking that they needed to report through the QA structure in order to get their jobs done. I mean, I think we can all agree that security is a hugely important function for the company, especially a company of this size. I think it does it a disservice if you start siloing it under the QA branch of the organization rather than, you know, having it report up through a chief security officer who's directly dealing with the CEO and the rest of the C-level executives at a given point in time.
I want to point out that the amount of money involved in this company is also a big factor on making the physical and electronic security its own department. The economic value of stealing the details of how to build a host is basically incalculable, and you need to give this serious consideration because there basically isn't an industry that wouldn't want that information. It could revolutionize everything. You've really got to take that seriously.
You're right, and I wonder how that satellite got into that host's arm.
I think the point you're trying to go at is if we actually had something like Chris was saying, like a CSO, right, a chief security officer, things like that hopefully would be caught. Maybe they wouldn't actually be caught, but you would hope that, you know, this group would be put together in order to combat those situations.
I would expect them to be responsible for things like securing the printing equipment. I mean, we see in the show that basically anybody can print whatever they want. They can remove all the security guards and security systems, I should say, in a host. They're supposed to have a bomb in their spine, for example, that is probably intended to be there all the time and not removed by whatever low-level employee decides.
That being said, we do see a lot of hosts take out actual security guards, but that seems like a different issue entirely. Like, I'm talking actual security guards.
Yeah, and I think that specific topic of the physical and security and the security processes, we'll be touching on in a different episode. But if we want to stick to really just how important it is, like Pat said, and the fact that it needs to be taken seriously and you need to have dedicated resources that specialize in it, having them report up through a group that doesn't necessarily appreciate that, such as QA, which I would like to take a moment to say that I'm not trying to disparage QA organizations by saying they can't take things seriously, only because I'd like to protect my future employment. But we need to make sure that things are all being handled in the appropriate fashion, and having a dedicated security organization helps to guarantee that.
Okay, so that's obviously one huge change that we'd want to make, is this security organization that we're talking about. I feel like there's probably a good discussion that we could have also around the behavior and the narrative groups that we see inside the show. I don't know if those are maybe not the right names for those organizations, or if we would want them to be doing something completely different. It seems like some ambiguity between those that maybe should be clearly defined.
Yeah, and I think probably the best standard correlation that we can make between the two of them is the kind of relationship we normally see with like a product versus development setup. You've got your narrative or your product people that are, you know, steering what the product is actually going to be doing and all those approaches and handling what the backlog of features is going to be that are getting rolled out and like, you know, the new narrative structures that are happening are really just large feature rollouts, for lack of a better, approach. And then you've got the behavioral specialists who are the ones that are actually implementing the code that makes sure the narratives run the way that they're supposed to. So I think that it gets a little bit muddled in what we see in the show, in terms of we see narrative kind of delving a little bit more into some of the coding and behavior really handling more of the overall nitty gritty rather than they handle more of the infrastructure approach, kind of, rather than the developmental one-offs for features. But I think it's an easy match, maybe not for everyone listening, but at least for those of us that have been in that kind of industry before. I'm waiting for the product people here to tell me that I'm wrong.
Well, I'll always tell you that you're wrong.
I'm waiting for you to tell me that I'm wrong specifically about this.
Unfortunately, I think you pretty much got it right. And you know that it takes me a lot. It takes a lot for me to say that to you.
I can tell that it takes a lot for you to say that.
One of the other groups that we kind of danced around and we talked a little bit about was obviously the QA side, the quality assurance group. Obviously a group that we need. We can't get rid of them. But should we be expanding that group to be having different roles, taking... we've already said that we're going to take the security side that's shown in the show out of that group. What other things should we be talking about with that whole department?
Well, if behavior and narrative are writing bug-free code, then we don't need QA.
Really, I think that there should be a software QA and a hardware QA division. As new hosts are developed and receive new interactions that they should be making with the guests, then that would be a lot to do with the hardware QA. Make sure these things act the way that they should be acting. Then software QAs would, I mean, they're still QA, but they would be looking at the product in a different way. They'd be looking at the software that runs on the hosts, or I don't know, at some point they have explosions that doesn't always need to be manual, that can be, I don't know, it can be different.
So I think you bring up an interesting point that we haven't really even come close to addressing here is there a need to have separate organizations for hardware and software completely versus having these teams kind of integrated, making one product? I think there's probably merits to both sides of the conversation, especially given how complex each division would end up being, right? The hardware is completely its own machine and its own animal, and software is going to be incredibly complex by itself. Do they need to be almost ran as two separate, completely organizations and then talk about a combination at the end?
So I would actually say three organizations. So the hardware is its own thing, and it needs to be able to support all of the different personalities that they support in the park, which is basically, I mean, they're trying to support every kind of person that there could be. So it's a pretty broad level of support that needs to be provided by the hardware. Then you need a similar organization that's building a software platform that can support all of those capabilities as well. That third group would be some part of behavior and narrative combined, to my mind, that handles the individual instances that are the ones that are in the park. They're the sort of the implementation teams, as it were, where those other two groups are the ones that everybody builds on their platform so that we can have a park be successful.
I feel like this is an area where you can learn from an existing company like Intel that makes a ton of different hardware and a ton of different software, and then the drivers in between them too. But they make a lot of software.
I mean, Microsoft is another great example, right? Everybody thinks of Microsoft as just the software guys who write Windows, but take a step back, right? They make, build, and ship Xbox. Huge platform by itself. And now the software that's inside those Xbox consoles is the same as the Windows software that's running on your PC, right? It's coming from the same group that's writing that software. And they're kind of having this integration step near the end.
So to go with the Xbox example, because I think it ties in well with the hosts in this park, you've got the Xbox hardware. You've got sort of the Xbox platform software, the thing that runs all the games, that you can get apps through, all of that. And then you've got the individual games and apps. Now, to my mind, these, just like in Xbox, they ought to be separate groups. They're very different concerns.
So slowly, it seems like we're really building the tree that we've been that we talked about before. Maybe ours has a little bit more organization than that community-driven one, but it seems like we're ending up with kind of the business basics, I guess I'll call them, marketing, finance, those types of things off on one side. Then it looks like we're going to end up with, if Pat has his way, three separate groups, which could have duplicated departments when it comes to names, but they would all have very different roles, right? There's obviously needs to be some sort of software engineer, or some engineering effort inside of the hardware division, some engineering effort inside the software division. Same thing with QA in both. And then kind of that third group, which is what we see in the show as behavior and narrative, which I think we've kind of really combined a lot into product, kind of making the overall decisions of where are we trying to go, what kind of experience are we trying to give to our guests. And I think a lot of that makes sense.
I think we might, so taking a step back from the actual engineering groups, because I think those three we've nailed down fairly well. I think there's another big group that's missing here that, if it existed, would have been seen in the show, and that's the day-to-day running of the park. We see a little bit of that very impressive hologram room where they're looking over everything.
The control center, right?
Yes. We see the field techs, you know, going out there and dealing with all of that stuff. There really needs to be some kind of organization that's responsible for handling this thing as this park, I should say, as things are happening.
Feels like, at least in our industry, that's something that we tend to call like an operations team, right? They're making sure that the service that we're running is actually, well, running, right? And things are going the right way. And bringing in the teams that need to be brought in when things go wrong. You're really making sure that the lights are on and that, you know, things are happening the way they need to.
I think the operations team is exactly the right group. If there's problems with the server, they're the ones to, you know, turn it off and on again. To be
three
to be
times
not very
exactly,
fair
right?
To the operations guys, but we see the field techs doing that. You know, when there's a bad release, they're the ones going out, shutting the things down, pulling the hosts out of the field, rolling back, releasing them again. I think there's a strong parallel there.
I think even beyond that, though, what we have really when we're talking about the operations of the park is something that is really akin to an amusement park, right? There already are parks today that we could probably take a very good lesson from, i.e. Disney, probably being the foremost one. They've got, you know, massive operations that keep seamless uptime for the most part of all of their park services. So I think having that kind of a breakdown, and we can probably throw an org chart of, you know, what Disneyland or Disney World looks like to give more of a deep dive in that than we can go into now, because the work's already kind of been done there. I mean, it's operational support structures are a big thing. I mean, that's huge work, and we don't need to necessarily reinvent the wheel there.
Well, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, Chris says, so I guess the whole podcast is a waste, and we're done. Hooray. Let's wrap it up. I'd say great podcast, guys, but apparently not. But guess maybe we'll do better next time.
Yeah, so in a non-sarcastic approach to what we talked about today, essentially we know that there are problems that exist in the organizational structure as it exists in the show that we need to probably rework a little bit. There's a big separation in the different branches of the software organization that we think should be, you know, kind of paired up together. There's some hardware stuff that we think needs to be addressed. We know that there are plenty of C-level executive roles that are open and need to be filled. And we know that there's some operational stuff that can also be, we can take lessons learned from other sizable companies that have done park type approaches well and implement that. I think that pretty much gets us there without being as dickish as Pat was.
Dickish.
Oh, sorry, PG. I think that gets us as far as we needed to go there without being as cynical as Pat was.
To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW. I think that's the nicest word anybody's tried to describe you with.
Yeah, smug. I'm moved.
Oh, actually, smug. Yeah, smug. Let me take this back. Without the smug cynicism present in what Patrick has said earlier.
Nice.
We've done some good work here.
Well, we talked about doing some good work here.
We talked about doing some good work.
We didn't do anything, guys. We sat here.
Huh. And we have a new heir to the smug cynicism throne.
Maybe they run like a startup.
I hate your guts. So, okay, that's the excuse that people who don't want to fix real problems give to not fix real problems.
I was good to end this, man. We're going to cross a threshold, and I'm just going to troll this podcast.
I'm out.
The opinions expressed by Joe Carlin in this podcast are not shared by the rest of the staff members.
May not be shared.
No, that's a non-disclosure agreement, Joe.
They're definitely not shared. No, we're certain about this. We're all here. We can definitely explicitly say that. Yes, it's for sure.